Okay, first, read Joyce. You asked what consumed meant, right? Remember from Leviticus 10, it says Nadab and Abihu were consumed, but then their bodies are carried out. Yes. Do you remember?
Yes.
Okay. So I looked it up. That word consumed is actually the same word that is used when Eve eats the apple. So it means to eat, is what it means. So their other translations will maybe translate it devour. So the word itself means to eat. So it's like when God consumes the sacrifice, it's almost like he's eating the sacrifice, and then he consumes Nadab and Abihu, and because they did not do it right, they become the sacrifice. So he eats them. So it doesn't, because in English, right, we think consume, we think there's nothing left of them. But that is not the connotation in the Hebrew. It means literally to eat. So I don't know if that's helpful. I mean, obviously there had to be a body left because they carried a body out. The clothes were left because they're carried out in their tunic. So they weren't burnt to ashes, totally burnt. But anyways, I thought it was interesting. I looked it up. It's like to eat. I was like, to eat? What? Which, I mean, we use that word to eat as well, to consume your food. We will use it that way too.
Well, I watch the show.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I watched the show Bones. And
oh.
The burned bodies, there's a carcass. I mean,
yeah. Right.
Clothing on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's even clothing left that they are studying to figure out who did it.
Right. So I don't know what they looked like at the end.
That's what I'm saying, the essence of them.
Yeah, but it does say fire came out from before the Lord, so there was something visible. There was fire.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised, though, if there was charring, if there was severe charring.
Yeah, and it could, because you can still have a body left.
Well, and you know, this is an example to everybody right. That's around. This is the fire of the Lord. This is powerful. Mm-hmm. They sinned royally. We're making an example
right.
Of them.
Right.
You know, yeah. If they had nothing wrong with them.
Right.
And just their spirits left, there would be no example.
Right. Well, they would still be dead. Right. Yeah. Maybe it wouldn't be as dramatic. Okay. Any other questions from last week? All right. We almost finished Leviticus 11. Not quite. We're on verse 41. So Leviticus 11, if we remember, right after Nadab and Abihu, right, God tells Aaron. He speaks to Aaron in chapter 10. The only time in Leviticus he speaks to only Aaron. And he says, you as priest, right, don't be drunk. And you are going to have to discern between clean and unclean and between holy and profane, okay? So then we said chapters 11 through 15 are all about clean, unclean, which is our favorite part of Leviticus. And so last week, chapter 11, we talked about clean and unclean animals. Okay, right, so for land animals, it's those who have the split hoof and chew the cud. They have to have both. For fish, it had to have fins and scales, so no shrimp, no lobster, nothing like that. Birds, basically you couldn't eat birds of prey or carrion eaters like vultures. And then insects, all you could eat were those that hopped. So the grasshoppers, locusts, crickets. What'd you say, Ainsley? Oh, insects. I don't think frogs were probably not clean. You can eat frogs now, but I don't think the Israelites could eat frogs. I don't think. Also, they couldn't eat anything that had a paw. So a cat, a dog, a bear, any sort of big cat. Okay. Also, the things, remember we talked about the things that swarm on earth, like the mice and the lizards. And then they're more of a danger because they can crawl in your pots and die. Right, they can make your house unclean, your stuff unclean. And remember, all unclean animals are only make you unclean if you eat them or if you touch their dead body, their carcass, okay? So like a camel, you couldn't eat, but you could ride a camel and be fine. Not a problem, okay, until the camel died. Okay, so only, and remember again, clean animals even could make you unclean if they were not slaughtered in the proper way, if they just died, right? And you had to touch their carcass, or you ate their meat, which was permissible, it just made you unclean, okay? So the dead body and eating a clean animal would also make you unclean if it was not killed in the proper way. But remember, this uncleanness of touching these unclean animals' dead bodies is like the least level of uncleanness, because you were only unclean till evening, you just had to wash, wash your clothes and then you were clean at sunset. Okay, so you weren't clean for a long period of time. And if something died, you could probably time your uncleanness, you know, maybe pick up the animal at 4 p.m. so that you're only unclean for like an hour or two, you know, something like that. Yeah. Or if there's a dead thing, you know, it needs to be taken care of, you go to Tabernacle first and then come home and take care of it. I mean, I'm sure there are practical ways to do that. So dead animals made you unclean, but it was for a very, very short period of time. Okay, any questions?
How often did they do laundry back then?
Probably whenever they were unclean. I mean, I don't know.
It was ongoing.
Yeah, right.
They didn't have a lot of water around.
Right. So right. No, right.
First of all, a lot of it was wool. Mm. Second of all, they didn't have very many outfits.
That's right.
And washing does wear clothes out to right. some degree. So they were, yeah, people smelled a lot more. They had all these sachets and things like that
yeah.
that the women tried to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. They weren't as picky.
Yeah. I'm sure it was not super often. Yeah.
We have Amish.
Yeah.
Like that now.
Right. Only wash periodically.
Growing up, my dad always thought you took a bath once a week.
Oh, my grandpa's still like that.
Yeah.
He says I bathe Saturday night, whether I need it or not, before Sunday.
He had to carry water and heat it. My
right.
grandma always put me in the summer kitchen, so I didn't get more than one time a week
yeah.
when I was with her.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. It was cold out there anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So times were not like they are now. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Can someone, let's see. Yes. Can someone read for me chapter 11, verse 41 to 47? We'll finish the chapter.
All the creatures that swarm on the earth are detestable. They must not be eaten. Do not eat any of the creatures that swarm on the earth, anything that moves on its belly or walks on all fours or on many feet, for they are detestable. Do not become contaminated by any creature that swarms. Do not become unclean or defiled by them. For I am Yahweh your God. You must consecrate yourselves and be holy because I am holy. You must not defile yourselves by swarming creatures that crawl on the ground. For I am Yahweh, who brought you up from the land of Egypt to be your God, so you must be holy because I am holy. This is the law concerning animals, birds, and all living creatures that move in the water, and all creatures that swarm on the ground, in order to distinguish between the unclean and the clean, because the animals that may be eaten and those that may not be eaten.
Okay, so here, verse 41 to 45, four different times, basically, it's saying those that swarm on the ground, and so these are like the mice, the lizards, snakes, right? Anything that crawls on its belly, the insects that have the centipedes that have many legs, okay? Four times, they're saying they're detestable over and over. Don't become unclean by them, okay? God's making a point. I don't know if people regularly ate these or what, but over and over again, don't make yourself unclean. Don't eat these things.
Why is he reiterating it? Because
yeah, great question. Yeah, it's the same idea. Yep. Now, this does add what crawls on the belly, I believe, and many feet. But yes, when I read it, I had the same, I was like, oh, God, you already said this. But if God says it more than once, you pay really close attention.
Right.
Right.
Easier to get something to eat.
Yeah. Maybe, especially if you're poor or, yeah.
Maybe it was more directed at the poor who couldn't afford.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without singling them out, but just.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
So, but they were not to eat it.
Sure cuts down on what you can eat.
Yes. I mean, you think about it, you could eat all grains, all plants, all everything like that. And remember, meat wasn't eaten a ton. Now, maybe you're going to go catch out your locusts and grasshoppers, especially if they come in swarms, you know, and then you can eat that. But this is saying, you know, you can't go kill that squirrel in your backyard and eat that, I mean, they did that here in America, or the mice, or whatever. You know, all these things God is saying, don't eat. Okay.
Well, a lot of missionaries, like in Africa, which this is real close to that, they do a lot of, like, you know, cooked beetles. And
yeah. Yeah.
Like
insects.
That,
yep.
They eat that.
Yep.
Over there. So
yep.
It more
right.
Like,
right.
Yes,
yes. And remember the goal, well, here we see what the goal of all these laws is, because what I found was very interesting in verse 44 and 45. Two times God says, be holy for I am holy. In all of Leviticus, it says this five times, and twice is here within two verses, and in relation to the dietary laws, okay? So five times in all of Leviticus. The other three places are Leviticus 19, verse 2, chapter 20, verse 7, and chapter 20, verse 26. Those are the other three times. So chapters 19 and 20, 19, verse 2, 20, verse 7, and 20, verse 26. But of the five times, two are here. Be holy, for I am holy. God says it twice. Okay? And so their diet is an important way that Israel was holy and set apart. So they were to be different from the Gentiles in what they ate. Okay, and he says, even in verse 45, for I am the Lord who brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. So he ties their dietary laws to, hey, remember, I'm the one that chose you. I'm the one that brought you up. So you obey what I say, and an important way of doing that is what you eat. And I think we said last week at the beginning, really, it was their diet, circumcision, and observing the Sabbath. Those three really set them apart. Now, there are going to be other laws about what they wear and the cloth they can use, but really their diet, the Sabbath, and circumcision are what made them very different from the Gentiles, set them apart. Okay. God had chosen them to be his own possession, and so they were to live like that, even in what they ate. Okay? So remember, this is very important, because this is going to be Aaron's job. He needs to make sure that he knows when people are clean and when they are unclean. And remember, all of these clean, unclean laws are set in the context of Nadab and Abihu. Okay? They did not listen to what God said. They did not do it exactly, and they're dead because of it. Okay, so pay close attention to what you can eat and what you cannot eat, because the consequence can be heavy. Okay, verse 46 and 47 is just a summary, basically, of chapter 11. All right, so the dietary laws were to set Israel apart. So in the New Testament, what happened to the dietary laws? That's right. Okay, let's go to Mark. Okay, and a lot of times we think Acts 10 of the repeal of the dietary laws. But the thing is, it was Jesus who repealed the dietary laws, Jesus himself. Mark 7. Can someone read for me Mark 7, 14 to 23? Abigail?
After he had called the crowd to him again, he began saying to them, listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside the man which can defile him if it goes into him. But the things which proceed out of the man are what defile the man. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. When he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples questioned him about the parable, and he said to them, are you so lacking in understanding also? Do you not understand that whatever goes into the man from outside cannot defile him, because it does not go out into his heart, but into his stomach, and is eliminated? Thus he declared all food clean, and he was saying, that which proceeds out of the man, that is what defiles the man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed the evil thoughts, fornications, thefts, murders, adultery, deeds of coveting, and wickedness, as well as deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. All these evil things proceed from within and defile the man.
Okay, so now Mark is writing this, obviously, after Jesus's death and resurrection, right? And so he looks back at this and says, see, Jesus here, he adds that in, thus he declared all foods clean, right? Because remember, Leviticus is a model. The Old Testament Levitical system was a model. And God has always been more concerned with the heart. And we have said over and over again, the Jews fell in love with the model. And by Jesus' day, right, the Pharisees had added a gajillion laws onto what God had already given them, right? And it was a matter of pride that they had never eaten anything unclean or done any of this. And God, Jesus is saying, you're so concerned about what you eat, but you don't care at all what's in your heart, right? You can say, oh, I only put the right foods in my mouth, but my heart is full of fornication, thefts, murders, adulteries, coveting, wickedness, but that's okay because my outward actions are good. And Jesus is saying, God doesn't really care what you put in your mouth. Okay. He cares about what's in your heart. So Jesus himself declared all things clean while he was here on earth. Then the passage we all normally think about is Acts 10. Okay. Can someone read for me Acts 10, 9 to 16?
Beheld the sky opened up, and a certain object like a great sheet coming down, lowered by four corners to the ground. And there were in it all kinds of four-footed animals and crawling creatures of the earth and birds of the air. And a voice came to him, "Arise, Peter, kill and eat." And Peter said, "By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything unholy and unclean." And again a voice came to him a second time, "What God has cleansed, no longer consider unholy." How far?
16.
And this happened three times, and immediately the object was taken up into the sky.
Okay, so God gives Peter this vision of all these unclean animals and tells him to eat. And Peter's like, no way. Okay? But then what's interesting is if you drop down to verse 28, and it's Peter speaking, and he said to them, "You yourselves know how unlawful it is for a man who is a Jew to associate with a foreigner or to visit him. And yet God has shown me that I should not call any man unholy or unclean." But what God showed him, right, was unholy and unclean animals. And yet Peter draws this distinction, right, because right after this vision, he's summoned to Cornelius's house, who is a Gentile, right? So the purpose of the dietary laws was to set Israel apart from the Gentiles. They are different. Now, in the church age, that distinction no longer is necessary, right? Because the doors have been opened to the Gentiles as well. In the Levitical model, the doors are open to the Gentiles as well. They just have to convert and become Jewish and obey the model, obey the laws, okay? But now Christ, he has fulfilled the model. He has fulfilled the law. And so the laws that distinguish between the Jews and the Gentiles are no longer necessary. We don't need those dietary laws anymore. Okay? Then one last place, let's go to Romans. Can someone read Romans 14, verse 15? Romans 14, verse 15.
"For if because of food your brother is hurt, you are no longer walking according to love. Do not destroy with your food him for whom Christ died."
Okay, so now we limit what we eat or drink, would be more likely in our culture, okay, because of love of brother, because we don't want to cause someone else to sin. Food is not worth it. Drink is not worth it if it's going to destroy somebody for whom Christ died, right? And back in this time, it might have been food offered to idols, right? That might have really injured someone's conscience. So if that's going to be the case, then it is better for you to refrain, even though you have the Christian liberty to eat or drink, whatever, right? If it's going to hurt someone else, it is better to refrain your liberty and choose to not for love of brother. Back in the Old Testament, it was to distinguish between Jew and Gentile. In the New Testament, it's so that our brothers or sisters do not sin. We are helping them on their journey. No, brother. Oh my goodness.
It's not Bambi.
It's the older one.
Hey, but that's funny, because venison was what kind of food in the Old Testament?
Unclean.
No, it's clean. Deer have split hooves and chew the cud. So. Yes.
You were alone without Becky.
So we should love our brothers and sisters unless they're from California.
Well, then we don't
have a bad. Oh my goodness. Okay. I have no idea. All right. So we don't have to obey the dietary laws anymore, but we are still, as a church, to be holy and distinct from the world. And this was a quote in one of my commentaries. The church does the most for the world when the church is least like the world. And that is goes against prevailing wisdom, right? Lots of churches are trying to be relevant, trying to draw in the unsaved, trying to be as like the world as they possibly can. And that does the world no good, right? The world needs an example of how to be different. So we do the world most good when we are least like the world. And that, I mean, that was the point of Israel. They were to show the world that God was holy. And they did that in every manner of their life. God was sovereign over what they ate. God was sovereign over their time, when they worked, when they didn't work, when they had a celebration, when they didn't have a celebration, right? God was sovereign over what they wore, how they planted their fields. I mean, God dictated everything about what Israel was to do, and they were to be the example that we follow our God and we obey what he does, and it's different from what you all do. That was to be the point. So we also, as a church, are to be different from the world. Questions? Leviticus 11. All right. Leviticus 12. Okay, we're going to go through 12 and 13, and if we get done early, then we just get done early. Chapters 12 through 15 deal with bodily defilement. So things that go wrong with your body or are just normal parts of your body, okay? So chapter 11, you could be made unclean from the outside, from touching a carcass or a dead animal, okay? Now you can become unclean just from a sickness or from who you are, all right? Or having a baby, you know, natural things. So sin is not merely a matter of environment, but of individual failure. Now remember, clean, unclean laws are not based on specific sins. It's not because you do a specific sin. Touching a dead animal is not a sin. Okay, having a baby is not a sin. Getting a skin disease is not a sin. Having mildew on your clothes is not a sin. Okay, but all those things, right, pain and childbirth, they're a result of living in a sinful world. Okay, so they're all related to sin, even though it's not like you do a specific sin. Adam and Eve would have had no skin diseases before the fall, right? Eve would not have had pain and childbirth before the fall. Yes, it is. I don't know how it would have worked, but she didn't even have a baby before the fall, so she never knew any different. All right, can someone read for me Leviticus 12, 1 through 5?
Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, when a woman gives birth and bears a male child, then she shall be unclean for 7 days, as in the days of her menstruation she shall be unclean. On the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. Then she shall remain in the blood of her purification for 33 days. She shall not touch any consecrated thing, nor enter the sanctuary until the days of her purification are completed. But if she bears a female child, then she shall be unclean for 2 weeks as in her menstruation, and she shall remain in the blood of her purification for 66 days.
Okay, no, that's good. That's good for right now. Thank you. Okay, so it tells us that when she has a baby, boy or girl, she is clean for either 7 or 14 days as in her menstruation. Okay, well, we haven't gotten details about that yet, so we don't know what that means. So let's go to Leviticus 15. And can someone read for me Leviticus 15, verse 19 to 24?
charge in her body is blood. She shall continue in her menstrual impurity for 7 days, and whoever touches her shall be unclean till evening. Everything also on which she lies during her menstrual impurity shall be unclean, and everything on which she sits shall be unclean. And when he touches her bed, shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. Whoever touches anything on which she sits shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. Whether it be on the bed or on the thing on which she is sitting, when he touches it, he shall be unclean until evening. How far?
Till 24.
If a man actually lies with her so that her menstrual impurity is on him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean.
Okay, so when you had your period, basically anyone who touched you or anything you touch becomes unclean. Okay, so it's a big deal for a week. So when you have a baby for the 7 or the 14 days, that's the same deal. Anything you touch is unclean, so I guess your baby's just constantly unclean. That's what I thought. But your baby's a baby, so they're not going to tabernacle anyway. Okay? And what you sit on, what you lie on is unclean. Okay? So that's what it's like for the first 7 days. Now, one of the reasons of the difference between men, boys and girls is that boys were to be circumcised on the 8th day. Okay, so then the mom is only unclean for the 7 days so that she can go to circumcision on day 8. And I would assume then at least baby's clean on day 8 too to be circumcised. Okay, so that's one reason. The other time, the 33 and the yeah. 33 days and then the 66 days. So those days, she can't go to tabernacle. She can't enter the sanctuary or touch anything that is holy, right? But she's not so unclean that she now contaminates others.
Okay,
so if you touch her, what she sits on, what she lies on, those are not unclean anymore. Okay, she still can't go to tabernacle. She can't touch anything that's holy, but her uncleanness is not catching. Okay, so for the first 7 or 14 days, it's like her uncleanness is infectious to others if they touch her, touch what she sits on or lies on. Okay.
Can she cook during those days?
Probably not.
Well,
that's what I thought. I had conversations with a friend in California about this, and it's like, you know, that might have been like your monthly break. Like you would get a break from your normal chores, you know? You know, maybe not from caring for the kids or whatever, but still less, more of a break. Maybe your responsibilities would have been less just because what you touch becomes unclean. And especially if your husband needs to go to tabernacle and needs to be clean, you know, maybe then he fends for himself a little more that week. I don't know.
To do the laundry that week. Didn't they live more with, thankfully they live more with extended family.
Yes, in community.
So, it's your turn to do the cooking.
Yeah. That's right. Right.
Yeah. Suspicious of you when you ask 4 weeks in a row.
Yes, Joyce.
Question. 33 days and 66 days, considering that most women have a period every month.
Yes. But these are after the baby. So some women's period comes back immediately, some women don't.
Okay, good.
Right?
Okay.
Right, so.
Especially if you nurse. I mean.
Right, a lot of women. If you nurse, right, your period doesn't come back right away. And so, right, and you can have some sort of bleeding all the way up through 6 weeks after the baby is born sometimes, you know, it just depends. So,
I was always told anywhere from like 6 to 12.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a long time. And not a lot, but just some. So, yeah. So, and I would assume, it's not super clear, but I would assume if you are bleeding, then you remain in your, like, period. If your bleeding lasts more than 7 days or whatever, I would assume that. It doesn't say that specifically, but I would assume because of your period, if you are bleeding, then you're going to be unclean. Yes?
Still, if you take the 7 days that she's staying home, plus
yeah.
the 33 extra days,
right.
40,
right.
compared to 66, so it's 24 more days if you have a girl.
Well, no, it's actually double. It's 80 days if you have a girl, because your initial time period is 14 days.
Oh, you're going to add that to the 66?
Yes, so it's either, you're either, for a boy, you can't go to Tabernacle basically for 40 days. For a girl, it's 80 days.
Yeah, how come?
Yeah, good question, and nobody had a good answer for me. And 14 for the girl. Okay, now for the boy, he gets circumcised on day 8. So that is a good reason why the boy is only 7. Yes, Mom?
Well, you were talking about why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are theories.
Okay, this theory is apparently after the birth of a daughter as a son reflected the stigma of the woman for Eve's part of the fall.
Yes, so that is part of, so okay, we'll just go there. Okay. Okay, so for a baby girl, everything is double. So it's 14 days unclean, like your period. So that means your uncleanness is catching, right? Nobody can touch you. Or, I mean, they can. They're just going to be unclean until evening. Or, and it's another 66 days that you can't go to Tabernacle. Okay. What'd you say?
What'd you say? Joyce
Germs. Oh. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so so possibly, these are the theories. Possibly, it's that women have the stigma of being responsible for having sin enter the world. Though the Bible, after Genesis 3, always blames it on Adam, okay? Because he was standing right there. But
spoken directly to.
Right, and he was spoken directly to, not Eve, and so he had to deliver the message to her. So that's a possibility. The second is that the daughter's own fertility and association with blood is anticipated. So when you have a girl, she is also going to menstruate and have babies. And so you're just unclean longer. There was another theory that I didn't even write down. Some doctor did a study, and supposedly there is a difference in your blood when the mom's blood went between a boy and a girl, and the something about more highly acidic after a girl. So there's that theory. There's also the theory that women are viewed as inferior to males. But we know that God does not view women inferior to males. We have different roles. In the culture, right? I mean, by the time you get to the New Testament, women are viewed as inferior in that culture because women's testimony is not accepted in court, right? I mean, and that's one of the reasons it's so important that when Jesus rose from the dead, he first appeared to a woman, right? She runs back and tells the disciples, and they don't believe her, right? Because her word doesn't mean anything, okay? But she was right, and Jesus appeared to her first. so I'm not, there is no consensus about why there is a difference, and it's double for a female. But God said it, so they had to do it, okay? And it's possible if you did get a break from work and all that, that maybe the mom was happier when she had a girl. I mean, to be unclean and not go to be able to go to Tabernacle, that would have been separation from God, would not have been a good thing. But, you know, maybe it's she gets a little more time to bond with her baby girl. So, okay. But the, yes. That's a great, yes, no, they did. They did, because the Pharisees would pray on the street corner. So they could, yes. But you can't go and be part of the sacrificial system or the, you know, any of that.
And it was a social thing.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so for the boy or girl, excluding the mom from Tabernacle for a period of time creates a distance between fertility and the worship of God. Okay, so this was probably important in that culture, because fertility rites and whatever were often associated with worship of the gods. The mom, after she has a baby in Tabernacle, creates a distance between fertility and the worship of God. Okay. So then there's the question, why does childbirth make you unclean? This is the longest period someone is unclean except for certain diseases, skin diseases, okay? 80 days. I mean, that's a good chunk of time, okay? Even 60 days is a good chunk of time. So this is the longest you really were unclean and still be accepted in society, right? For the skin diseases we're going to see, you're put outside the camp. So it seems like childbearing would be frowned upon, right? Because this, it makes you unclean. But that's not the case. We know that. Barrenness was seen as a curse, not having children. Okay. Verses 4, 5, and 7 all refer to her blood. Okay. Verse 4, she shall remain in the blood of her purification. Again, 5, blood of her purification. Okay. 7, then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her, and she shall be cleansed from the flow of her blood. So the emphasis seems to be on her loss of blood, not the baby, right? Not the act of childbirth itself, but the loss of blood. Okay? So why does blood make you unclean? Possibly because blood is life-giving, right? That's why they were not to eat the blood, because the life is in the blood. And so loss of blood speaks of death, okay? The result of the fall. Also, possibly because blood is what makes atonement, but blood in the wrong place then makes you unclean. Okay, so it's just some thoughts. We don't know exactly why God said everything that he said, but it seems like when there is blood not at tabernacle, right, not from a sacrificial animal, then that's going to make you unclean.
And then when Christ came and fulfilled everything, obviously women don't have to do this anymore.
Correct. Correct. Right, because this is part of the model, part of the ceremonial law. Yep. I mean, and honestly, after 70 AD, they couldn't because the temple was gone.
That's true.
Okay. Can someone read for me verse 6 through 8?
When the days of her purifications are completed for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring to the priest at the doorway of the tent of meeting a one-year-old lamb for a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her, and she shall be cleansed from the flow of her blood. This is the law for her who bears a child, whether a male or female. But if she cannot afford a lamb, then she shall take 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, the one for a burnt offering and the other for a sin offering, and the priest shall make atonement for her, and she will be cleansed.
Okay, so this is what she did after she had a baby, after her 40 or 80 days. Okay, she brought a burnt and a sin offering. Okay, then she would be fully clean. Now notice, she offers a sin offering, but there is no discussion of forgiveness. Okay, she is not bringing a sin offering because she has sinned in a specific way that needs forgiveness. The sin offering is to cleanse her from her blood, her uncleanness. Okay, now her blood in childbirth, it seems like, is tied to sin. Right, to the result of sin, but it's, she didn't do a specific sinful act. That's not why she's bringing her sin offering. Okay, sin is indirectly involved, not directly involved. Okay, and notice also that the offering for a boy or a girl child is the same. Okay, so you didn't have to bring a lesser value offering for the girl or a higher value offering for the boy. So both of them are the same. And again, there's the exception. If you are poor, you can bring 2 birds instead of a lamb and a bird.
So her indirect, just to make sure yeah. I got this straight, her indirect sin was that she had been unclean because of her blood.
Right, right. And that links back to Eve and the curse and all that. So the result of sin, even though she did not sin specifically herself, the mom. Okay. Do we remember Joseph and Mary? What did they bring for Jesus? Do you remember?
Same thing.
What same thing?
The doves and what they just talked about. Turtle doves or pigeons?
Right. They bring the offering of the poor person. They bring 2 turtle doves or 2 pigeons. I can't remember. Okay. But it's Luke 2:21-24. It says that when Mary's done with her purification time, which would have only been the 40 days, right? Because Jesus was a boy, obviously. They bring 2 turtle doves. So, he would have been circumcised at 8 days, but she would have brought her offerings after 40 days to cleanse herself. And so it was the two birds. So so it's interesting that when God sent his son, he sent him into a poor family. I mean, Mary and Joseph couldn't even afford the lamb and then the pigeon or the turtle dove for Mary, to cleanse Mary. It was the two birds, all right?
Did circumcision have to be done at the temple, or could it be done at the local level?
My guess is it could be done at the local level, though I don't have any. It says, well, let's go. If you go to Luke 2, I don't know if it says where Jesus was circumcised.
Well, he was still in Jerusalem, so.
Well, they would have been in Bethlehem, though.
But that's not that far from Jerusalem. I'm thinking of.
Right, in Galilee.
Or pigeons.
It's a yeah.
Up from Bethlehem, but not south from Nazareth where they came from.
You know, it doesn't even say where he was circumcised, though. It says when he was 8 days had passed before his circumcision, his name was then called Jesus. And then verse 22 says, and when the days for their purification, according to the law, so that would have been after 40 days of Moses were completed, they brought him up to Jerusalem. So after the 40 days, it says specifically he goes to Jerusalem.
Right.
And they would have still been in Bethlehem. They were probably in Bethlehem right until the wise men came when Jesus was about two. So then they had a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. So I don't, my guess is the circumcision could be done at the local level, but I don't know that for sure.
It makes sense for the people in the outlying area.
Well, because you would have had to start traveling immediately then some, you know, to make it down to Jerusalem. Right, so then you could be.
There's a little time for a woman to recover.
Right, before you travel. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay, any other questions that I don't have answers to? We can ask them. All right, chapter 13. Yes, I know. All right, so. These are going to be all about skin diseases, all right? Okay, but we have to remember, okay, this is all about the holiness of God, and Leviticus is a model, okay? So if you are unclean in the model, it does not mean you have been totally rejected by God, okay? If you are rejected by the system, does not mean you have been totally rejected by God, okay? It is a model. All right. Intro to chapter 13. What's interesting is, okay, in your, well, actually, Marion, does your version say leprosy all the time? Like verse 2, read me verse 2.
When the person has a swelling scab or spot on the skin of his body and it becomes a disease of the skin of his body, he is to be.
Okay, so you have disease of the skin of his body.
Yeah.
NASB has leprosy everywhere, okay? What's interesting is that the Hebrew word that's translated either leprosy or disease of the skin for the mildew that gets on your clothes and the marks on the house that we're going to talk about in chapter 14, it's all the same word, okay? So the mark on your skin, the mark on your clothes, the mark on the house, in Hebrew, it's all the same word. It, if you care, it's tsara'at, T-S-A-R-A-A-T, okay? Doesn't really matter. It's just, it's all the same word in Hebrew. And so it's really hard to translate into English because we don't have one word that's going to cover something on your skin, something on your clothes, something on your house. But the commonality between all three of these is that they were recognized by discoloring of the surface. So they changed the color either of your skin, the clothes, or your house. It affected just part of it, not the whole thing. That's very important, okay? And it was more than superficial. It went deeper than the skin, and it spread. So that was one thing. If it spread in your clothes or on the walls of your house or on your skin, then you were unclean, or the clothes were unclean or your house was unclean, okay? So in Hebrew, it's all this one word. In English, unfortunately, for most of our translations, it's translated leprosy. But this is not the leprosy that we think of where your hands go numb or whatever and you can end up losing fingers and whatever. the other term for it is Hansen's disease. I don't know who Hansen was, but apparently he had leprosy. Okay, this is not that. This is a skin disease of some sort that is not leprosy. The reason we don't think it is leprosy, the symptoms don't match leprosy. And the Greek, okay, let's back up. The reason it's translated leprosy is because when the Old Testament was translated into the Greek, which is the Septuagint, this word was translated in Greek lepra, L-E-P-R-A, so you can hear leprosy from that. Okay, and so then in English, we translate it leprosy. But the Greek word lepra is not the Greek word for leprosy. Okay, that's a totally different word. So lepra seems to refer to scaliness, some scaly disease of the skin. Some commentators think that this might be more like psoriasis. Okay, the modern day psoriasis. And go ahead.
My foot no kind of piggybacks on everything you just said, but then it goes, during the post-exilic, I'm saying that right, period, rabbis identified 72 types of skin disease.
Right, so this can be different types of skin disease. It's not just all leprosy. So in your Bible, when you read leprosy, it's not what we would think of as modern day leprosy. Okay, these are skin, it's just basically it's a disease of the skin. Okay. Now, we're going to talk about several different diseases of the skin today, or several different situations, but they're all going to follow the same pattern, okay? First, it's going to talk about the symptoms. Then the priest has to come and inspect it. Then we're going to get details about the specific symptoms that the priest looks for to determine whether you're clean or unclean, and then their diagnosis, okay? So some of these things, we're just going to fly right through. Okay, we'll spend more time on the first 8 verses, and then the rest of the chapter will go really quick. All right, questions before we dive into the details of skin disease?
I'm assuming the priest can only just look and actually,
touch.
Like a doctor would.
Probably. Oh, that is a good point. The job of the priest is not to diagnose or treat. The job of the priest is only to determine if you are clean or unclean. So either you have a problem or you don't have a problem. His job was not to say you have this specific skin disease, this specific problem, okay, and this is how you treat it. The job of the priest was only to say you're fit for society or you're not fit for society, basically. Okay, so it says what he is to look for, but it was not to be, he was not to tell you have this specific disease and this is what you do about it. Can someone read for me verse 1 through 8?
The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron. When a person has a swelling, scab, or spot on the skin of his body, and it becomes a disease on the skin of his body, he is to be brought to Aaron, the priest, or to one of his sons, the priests. The priest will examine the infection of the skin on his body. If the hair in the infection has turned white, and the infection appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it is a skin disease. After the priest examines him, he must pronounce him unclean. But if the spot on the skin of his body is white and does not appear to be deeper than the skin, and the hair in it has not turned white, the priest must quarantine the infected person for 7 days. The priest will then re-examine him on the 7th day. If he sees that the infection remains unchanged and has not spread on the skin, the priest must quarantine him for another 7 days. The priest will examine him again on the 7th day. If the infection has faded and has not spread on the skin, the priest is to pronounce him clean. It is a scab. The person is to wash his clothes and will become clean. But if the scab spreads further on his skin after he's presented himself to the priest for his cleansing, he must present himself again to the priest. Oh, through 8, sorry.
Yeah.
The priest will examine him, and if the scab has spread on the skin, then the priest must pronounce him unclean if he has a skin disease.
Okay. So verse 1, God speaks to Moses and Aaron, okay? Aaron has to know this info because it is the priests who examine and declare clean and unclean, okay? And remember, this is in the context of Nadab and Abihu. It is very important that the priests get it right. Because if an unclean person comes into tabernacle, right, that defiles the entire system, Okay, and Nadab and Abihu did things their own way, and they got zapped for it. So you better believe we yawn our way through Leviticus 13, right? You better believe Aaron was paying attention and taking notes and wanting to do it right, okay? We're like, oh my goodness, this is so boring, right? And Aaron is on the edge of his seat paying attention because this is very important because it's his job. This is his job. If someone has a skin disease, he better get it right and not make the wrong call. All right. So I know for us, this is not the most interesting chapter, but for Aaron and the priests, this was very important, and they had to know all this stuff. Okay, so first, you have a layperson who has a skin problem. Okay, he suspects that it's serious, swelling, scab, bright spot, whatever, infection, so he goes to the priest. Okay, again, the priest's job is not to identify the disease or treat the disease. His job is only to identify if it's infectious and if you're unclean or not. That's it. So what he specifically looks for is if the hair is white and if the infection appears deeper than just the skin surface. Okay, if he sees that immediately, then you are declared unclean on the spot. If the hair is white and the infection is below the skin, okay? If not, if he can't tell or he's not sure, right, you will go into quarantine for 7 days where you're by yourself, okay? If it gets better, then you're clean. If it gets worse, then you're unclean. If it doesn't change at all, you get to quarantine another 7 days, okay? So, but it's basically 2 weeks is the max, then you're declared clean or unclean, okay? What'd you say? Yeah, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, yes.
Isn't it interesting, though, that the doctors say, well, do this or whatever and let me know in a week if you're better.
Right.
And then COVID is a 2.
Yeah.
We're still going back. Why don't they say 12 days?
Yeah, right.
20 days,
yeah.
Or a month. Yeah.
That's funny. So, yes, it was basically, he could declare you unclean on the spot. Right? Or after a week, unclean. Or if it's healed after a week, you could be clean, right? But if there's any question, the max is 2 weeks and then you're declared clean or unclean, okay? If you're declared clean, you wash your clothes, you're fine, you can go back, you can do whatever. But verse 7 and 8, if the scab spreads, okay? So if you've been declared clean and the priest missed something or made the wrong call or it got worse, it got infected, you know, whatever, and it spreads, then you have to come back again, and the priest is then going to declare you unclean. Okay? Okay, so this, verse 1 through 8, this is basically the template. The rest of the chapter follows this template. Everything else is exactly the same. We get a bunch of different examples, but basically it's the same. You come to the priest. He looks for specific symptoms. A lot of times you're quarantined a week or two. Then you're declared clean or unclean. Okay, verse 9 to 17, we're not going to read it, but this is a chronic skin disease. This is basically if a skin disease affects your whole body. If it affects your whole body, but there is no quote-unquote raw flesh, you are clean. What's interesting is when you are unclean is if only a part of your body is affected. Okay, so here it talks about if you have raw flesh, then you are unclean. And raw flesh may be inflammation of the skin that is making it red or bleeding that occurs if some of the skin has been rubbed off. Okay? It says, though, that if your whole body is white or the raw flesh turns white, then you become clean again. So the white would probably be new skin that is growing over, right? It's healed it and you've become clean. So if you have a disease that affects your whole body but there's no raw flesh, then you are clean. Okay, you are not unclean. Leviticus 13, 18 to 28. Okay, we're not going to read this. This is side effects of boils or burns. So if you have a boil and it heals, but it leaves a mark on your skin that could be an infection, right? You got to go show the priest. And again, it's the same deal. You're quarantined for 2 weeks. If nothing spread, you're fine. Same with a burn, right? You could get a burn and it could get infected. Right? And if there's an infection, if it's deeper than the skin, then you're unclean. Show the priest again. 2 weeks, same deal. Okay? verses 29 to 37. This is for the scalp and the beard. So these are sores on your head. Okay, if you notice, verse 29 says, if a man or a woman has an infection of the head or on the beard. The reason a woman is specifically mentioned, right, is because it talks about beards, right, which women don't have, but that doesn't mean women are exempt, right? They can still get sores on their head. So in everything prior to this, the priest is looking for white hair and if the infection is deeper than the skin. Here, he is looking for yellow hair. So this is something different. Yellowing hair and deeper than the skin. The difference here is if after the first 7 days of quarantine they can't tell if it's healed or not, then they shave your hair. Okay, probably to be able to see better if the infection is spreading or if it's just localized. Okay. So there the priest is looking specifically for yellow hair. Verse 38 and 39, when a man or a woman has bright spots on the skin of the body, even white bright spots, when the priest shall look at, and if the bright spots on the skin are faint white, it is eczema that is broken about on the skin. He is clean. Okay? So if you have patches of skin that discolor, that go white, but there's no infection, it doesn't go deeper than the skin, it is just a skin top problem, then you're fine. It's not an infection. You are clean. If your skin discolors, right, turns white or a different color, but it's not an infection. It doesn't go deeper than the skin. You're just maybe patchy a little bit. You're clean. Okay. Verse 40 to 44 talks about baldness. Baldness doesn't make you unclean. You can lose your hair. That's fine. No problem. If you get a sore on your bald head, then that's a problem. Okay, but baldness itself does not make you unclean. Okay. Verse 45 and 46. Can someone read that for me?
Shall be uncovered, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp.
Okay, so this is the conclusion to the skin disease section. After this section, we have mildew on your clothes, okay? When you were pronounced unclean through any of these circumstances, okay, after 2 weeks of quarantine or immediately or after 1 week, whatever, when you're pronounced unclean, you have to tear your clothes, mess up your hair. I think in the NAS it says the hair of his head shall be uncovered. But that, if you look at it, that uncovered can also be translated disheveled. Okay, so you would mess up your hair. You would cover your lip or the lower half of your face and call out unclean so others wouldn't touch you and become unclean because they've come in contact with you. Okay, these are all signs of mourning, like mourning the death of someone. Okay, you also had to live by yourself outside the camp. You are permanently unclean, so you until you're healed. I mean, not permanently as in you can never become clean again, but when you have a child, you are unclean for a specific amount of time. When you have a skin disease, you don't know when you're going to be clean again. It could be years. It could be days. You don't know. Okay. So you are permanently unclean. So you have to be separate from the camp where God is present. You have to separate yourself from God's presence. Okay. It almost mirrors the expulsion of Adam and Eve, right? It's like if you are unclean, you are sent out of the camp. Okay, so no wonder they went into mourning, right? You are separated from your family and from your friends. You are to live by yourself. Nowadays, we have people who love to be by themselves. They go up to the woods to be all by themselves, right, away from everybody. But in this culture, to live alone was calamity, right? This was like the worst curse. Israel knew God had created them to live in community, and they were now banished from this community. Okay, basically, you experienced a living death. Your life as a member of God's people and experience God's blessing had come to an end. You were outside the camp. Okay? So this was a pretty harsh consequence of being unclean with a skin disease, that you had to live outside the camp. I mean, and this is why in Jesus' day you had the lepers, right, by the side of the road crying out, you know, Son of David, have mercy on us. And he healed them, right, which would have then totally changed their lives. Okay? So remember, this is a model, right? It is not that God does not love sick people, right? But the sick and infirm cannot come near God in the model because God is holy, okay? And wholeness is somewhat equivalent to holiness, right? Because if you were a member of Aaron's line, right, but you had some deformity, you could not be a priest. You could not serve in the tabernacle, right? Only those who were physically perfect, I mean, right, they're not going to be perfect, but did not have any sort of deformity could serve God, okay? That's not because God does not love those who are deformed or disabled or sick, okay? But in the model, remember, this is a picture. It is a picture to the world. This is who God is. God is a God of life and perfection. And so anything that is not life and perfection does not have part with God, okay? And here was a quote in one of my commentaries. It says, yet it was considered so important to preserve the purity of the tabernacle and the holiness of the nation that individuals and families might be forced to suffer a good deal. Individual discomfort was not allowed to jeopardize the spiritual welfare of the nation, for God's abiding presence with his people depended on uncleanness being excluded from their midst. Remember, God lived there in the tabernacle. And so the tabernacle had to be kept pure. You could not have unclean, right? This is why the model does not work, right? And we needed a fulfillment for the model. Questions? Okay. The last section will be really fast. This is mildew on clothes. If you look at verse 47, when a garment has a mark of leprosy in it. So here, at least in the NAS, they tried to translate the word the same because it's the same Greek word. It's that same tsara'at word that's used for skin disease. Okay? And the same process is followed. If you read it, if you have a mark on your clothes, you bring it to the priest. They examine it. They quarantine it for 7 days. Look at it again. Then they wash it. Then they quarantine it again. If the mark fades, right, then they just tear out the mark, the part that has the mark in it. If it spreads, then it's burned. If after you've washed it and quarantined it 2 weeks, it hasn't changed at all, it is unclean, it is burned. Okay, in essence, that's what it says. Okay, that's chapter 13. Again, the emphasis is on wholeness. The skin diseases that are discussed only affect a part of you. If it affected your whole body, you were clean. Okay, so the idea here is mixtures are an abomination. You can't have part of you that's unclean without it making you all unclean. Okay, and we're going to see there are other laws, right? You can't mix fabrics in your clothing. You can't mix seeds when you're sowing a field, right? Mixtures in God's eyes are an abomination in the model, okay? In the model. Because the idea was wholeness and holiness, and God is holy. Yes? So the warp and the woof, there was discussion on this. Okay, so it's when you weave cloth, right? You have your horizontal, and I am not a weaver, right? And then you, or your vertical, whatever way it goes, and then you weave the shuttle in and out. So one of them's the warp, one of them's the woof. Okay, then there was discussion, how in the world can you have an infection on just the warp or just the woof, okay? And so the thought was maybe they use different kinds of yarn, thicker yarn maybe for the structure of it, and then what's weaved in and out is a thinner yarn, a lighter yarn. And so it might affect only one type of yarn. Yeah. Any other questions? My baby struggled this time, huh? It's probably Johnny. All right. So next week we'll probably do 14, 15, and we'll see if we get into 16, which is Day of Atonement. So I will pray and we will be done. Dear Father in heaven, we thank you for your word. We thank you that you are holy. Lord, and I feel like that is something the church needs to get back to understand your holiness, your set apartness. We have complete access to you, and I think a lot of times that brings familiarity, and we do not step back and totally understand your holiness and how different you are than us. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the Old Testament and how it emphasizes your holiness over and over again. Be with us today. I pray that you would bring healing to Rita, that you would fix her leg so that she can walk and join us again. I know that's frustrating to be down and out. I pray for these ladies. Thank you for their desire to learn and study your word. Bless them as they go about their day. In Jesus' name, amen.